Size ilk konuşmacımı takdim etmek istiyorum. İlk konuşmacım Dr. Fazele Rana. Mr. Rana, RBT, Reason to Believe'in başkan yardımcısı, biyokimyacı. Genetik ve sentetik biyoloji alanlarında çalışmalar yapan Dr. Rana'nın yaratılışın bilimsel delilleri konusunda iki kitabı, hücre zarının yapısı konusunda doktora tezi, belgeseli, Biochemist Apply Stethoscopy, hep bunda sorun çıkartıyorum biliyorum. PEPS Letters, Journal of Microbiological Methods ve Journal of Chemical Education gibi hakemli bilimsel dergilerde yayınlayarak geniş okuyucu kitlelerine ulaşmıştır. Birçok makalesi olan Sayın Rana, dünyanın çeşitli yerlerinde 500'den fazla üniversitede konferans ve kilisede konuşmacılık yapmıştır. Dr. Rana bugün bize DNA'nın ilham verici tasarımı konusunda konuşma yapacak. Okay, Rana, the microphone is yours.
Well, good morning, everybody. It really is a pleasure and it's an honor for me to be taking part in the second international conference on the origin of life and the origin of the universe. I had the privilege of speaking at last year's conference, and it was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And so I'm very grateful for the organizers to invite me to come back again this year. I consider it again an honor. It's also exciting for me to be part of this project. It's refreshing to share the stage with fellow Christians and Muslims as we work together to demonstrate the scientific evidence for God's existence, but also to identify the scientific challenges to the theory of evolution. And this is very important because the theory of evolution is used to uphold, to support an atheistic worldview. Because it's a reasonable question, I think, to say, if evolution can explain the origin and the history and the design of life, then what role is there for a creator to play? Richard Dawkins, in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, said these words. Here we go. Although atheism might have been logically tenable before Darwin, Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. And it's statements like these that cause many people, I think, to believe that there is conflict between science and religion. But yet, it was science that paved the way for my conviction that there was a creator. When I was an undergraduate student, I was an agnostic. I didn't know if God existed or not. I was more interested in becoming a biochemist, doing everything I could to prepare myself to go to graduate school to get a PhD in biochemistry. As an undergraduate student, I was convinced that evolution was the way to explain the origin of life, the history of life, the design of life. Not because I examined the evidence and drew that conclusion, but because that's what my professors taught. Professors that I admired and respected. And I accepted what they taught about the theory of evolution uncritically. I meet many students when I speak on university campuses who are like me. They accept the theory of evolution because this is what their professors are teaching them. But things changed for me when I went to graduate school. In graduate school, one of the key things that's part of that education is teaching students to think independently, to think critically, to become scientists, to evaluate the evidence and draw conclusions regardless of what the experts say. And I began to ask questions I wouldn't have asked as an undergraduate, like, where does life come from? How do scientists explain the origin of life? And I was prompted to ask that question because as I was learning about biochemistry, I came to appreciate the incredible elegance and sophistication, the ingenuity of biochemical systems. So I wanted to know, how do scientists explain where these systems come from? And as I began to evaluate the different theories for chemical evolution, for the origin of life, I was shocked. I very quickly realized that chemistry and physics could not produce the elegant designs of biochemical systems. And it was that recognition coupled with the design of biochemical systems that convinced me there had to be a mind, there had to be a creator that brought life into existence. And then that prompted me to ask other questions, such as, who is that creator? How do I relate to that creator? And I personally found the answer to those questions in the Christian faith. That was 30 years ago. And over the last three decades, there have been advances in biochemistry, insights into the origin of life problem that only make that conclusion even stronger. And what I'd like to do today is give you just a glimpse into some of the evidence, some of the reasons why I think that life must stem from the work of a creator, and I'm going to focus on the DNA molecule. But instead of talking about the optimal and elegant design of the DNA molecule, which would be a lecture that would go on for hours, what I'm going to do is talk about something I think fascinating about DNA. DNA is so optimally designed that it's inspiring new technologies, new nanotechnologies, specifically the development of new types of data storage media. It's leading the way in developing the next generation of computers. It's leading the way in developing nanoelectronics. This whole area of research is called bioinspiration in biomimetics, where designs in biology are inspiring new technologies. And I believe that this is actually fertile ground to develop new reasons to believe that there is a creator that brought life into existence. Now, to appreciate how DNA can inspire this type of technology, we need to understand the role of DNA inside the cell. DNA is simply an information storage system. And the information in DNA is digital information. And scientists believe that DNA actually is at the theoretical maximum in terms of data storage capacity, which is a remarkable property. And because of that property, again, DNA is inspiring new technology. DNA is optimally designed for its role as a data storage system. And because of time constraints, I can't get into all the details of the structure of DNA and how it contributes to its optimal data storage properties. Every facet, every detail, every nuance aspect of the DNA structure contributes to this particular property. And if people want more information, I would recommend that they take a look at my book, The Cell's Design, where I have a section that describes the optimal nature of the DNA molecule. But for now, what we're going to do is simply turn our attention to the role that DNA is playing in inspiring new technology. And the first place I want to look at is DNA as a digital storage data system. Now, this is really interesting. Currently, the world is facing a data storage crisis. You may not have realized that, but we're facing a data storage crisis. There's currently 44 trillion gigabytes of data in the world. Now, to give you some context, if there's 10 billion people on the planet, it would mean each person would have to have over 6,000 compact disks in order to store all that data. It's a massive amount of data. And in fact, experts predict by 2040, if we continue at this pace of generating data, there will not be enough high-quality silicon in the world to make the data storage devices that we need. This is a real problem. This is where DNA comes into play, because 1 kilogram of DNA can store all the data that currently exists in the world. Again, DNA operates at the theoretical maximum for data storage capacity. This has led scientists to contemplate using DNA as a digital storage medium. And as a proof of principle, in 2012, a Harvard scientist, George Church, and his team actually encoded an entire book in the DNA molecule. This book was about 55,000 words and even included 11 JPEG images. And I would dare say that DNA could actually encode all the works of Heron Yahya as well. It has that much data storage capacity. One of the things that was real interesting that George Church and his team did is they encoded the DNA in fragments, where part of the fragment was a locator sequence, like a page number on a page in a book, and the other part contained data. That allowed them to go into the DNA system and actually retrieve data, not only page by page, but to skip around and locate data randomly from different pages. Really, really clever design. DNA is so optimal, again, in its data storage capacity that it's actually serving as inspiration for technologists to look at developing other types of man-made polymers that could serve as digital storage devices as well. So DNA clearly is an inspirational molecule. Computer scientists and molecular biologists have come to realize that the fundamental operations on DNA, transcription, replication, DNA repair, are literally functioning like computer systems. And this has inspired a whole new area of nanotechnology called DNA computing. And this is a picture of Leonard Adleman, who is the father of DNA computing. He's a scientist at the University of Southern California in the United States. DNA computers are housed in little tiny test tubes, this big, yet they are more powerful than the most powerful supercomputer systems that we've built to date. And their power comes from two things: the data storage capacity of DNA and the opportunity to do massive parallel operations simultaneously. In fact, researchers have been able to solve problems that you cannot solve with silicon-based computers, such as directed Hamilton path problems and what's called the Knight problem. Now, another interesting property of DNA is that it can function like a molecular scale wire. And this was a discovery made in the early 1990s by Jacqueline Barton, a chemist at Caltech. She discovered that DNA has this unusual property of being able to conduct electrical current along the length of the DNA double helix. And in fact, about 10 years later, she and her team showed that this is actually playing a critical role in detecting damage to the DNA. And this diagram attempts to show that. What you have is a surveillance proteins that will bind to the DNA.
Kimyasal ve de fiziksel nedenlerle çift telezonda oluşan hasar hücre aksamı tarafından tespit edilebilmektedir. Hasar tespit edilenlerle bağlanan gözetim proteini tarafından yapılmaktadır.
Another surveillance protein that's bound to the DNA will pick up that electron, and when it picks up the electron, it dissociates from DNA, migrates down the DNA.
Gözetim proteini bir elektron kaybettiğinde DNA çift telezonundan ayrılmaz. DNA'ya bağlanan başka gözetim proteinleri DNA'nın demir sülfür redoks merkezinden elektronları toplar. Bu işlem bittiğinde DNA'dan koparak çift telezon boyunca tekrar hareket ederler. Varacakları noktaya ulaşan gözetim proteinleri DNA'ya tekrar bağlanarak DNA'nın içine bir elektron yollar. Bu gerçekten çok karmaşık bir sistemdir ve bu sistem bilim adamlarının aynı şeyi teknolojiye
So again, DNA is an inspirational molecule inspiring at least three areas of technology that all relate to its digital data storage capacity. But I think DNA is doing more than inspiring technology. It's inspiring the case for a creator, a new way to argue for God's existence. And to appreciate that, I'd like for us to spend a minute considering the works of the British natural theologian William Paley, who in the late 1700s presented the world with the watchmaker argument for God's existence in his book Natural Theology, or Evidences of the Existence and Attributes of the Deity Collected from Appearances in Nature. And this is how Paley introduces the watchmaker argument. In crossing a heath, suppose I pitched my foot against a stone and were asked how that stone came to be there. I might possibly answer that for anything I knew to the contrary, it had lain there forever. But suppose I had found a watch upon the ground, and it should be inquired how the watch happened to be in that place. I should hardly think of the answer which I had given before, that for anything I knew, the watch might have always been there. Yet why should not this answer serve for the watch as well as the stone? Why is not it as admissible in the second case as the first? For this reason, and for no other, that when we come to inspect the watch, we perceive what we could not discover in the stone, that its several parts are framed together for a purpose. That is, they are so formed to and adjusted to produce motion, and that motion so regulated as to point out the hour of the day, that if the different parts had been differently shaped from what they are, or placed after any other manner or in any other order than that in which they are placed, either no motion at all would have been carried on in the machine, or none which would have answered the use that it is now served by it. This mechanism being observed, the inference we think is inevitable, that the watch must have had a maker. There must have existed at some time, at some place or other, an artificer or artificers who formed it for the purpose which we now find it actually to answer, who comprehended its construction and designed its use. For Paley, the characteristics of the watch and the complex interaction of its precision parts for timekeeping purposes implied the work of an intelligent designer. Paley asserted by analogy that just as a watch requires a watchmaker, so too life must require a creator, since organisms display a wide range of features characterized by the precise interplay of complex parts.
Saatçi benzetmesine göre hem saat hem de organizmalar bir tasarım ortaya koyar. Nasıl saatler bir saat ustasının ürünü ise organizmalar da bir yaratıcının ürünüdür. Bu noktada biyokimya alanındaki ilerlemeler saatçi tezine taze bir anlayış getirmektedir. Hücre içindeki DNA bilgisayarları, insan tasarımı objelerle biyokimya tasarımları arasındaki dikkate değer benzerlikleri vurgular. Günümüzde mühendisliğin ulaştığı son nokta olan bilgisayar sistemlerinin var olması için bir zihne veya zihinlere ihtiyaç vardır. Hücre içerisinde de bilgisayar sistemleri mevcut olduğuna göre hayatın var olması için ilahi bir zihnin olduğu sonucuna varabiliriz. Bu sonuç doğrultusunda Adelman'ın bilgisayarla biyoloji arasındaki ilişkiyi nasıl açıkladığına bir bakalım. DNA bilgisayarları hakkındaki en önemli şey DNA moleküllerinin normalde bilgisayarların yaptığını düşündüğümüz işlemleri yapmasıdır. Bu bilgisayar biliminin ve biyolojinin birbiriyle yakından bağlantılı olduğunu gösterir. Bundan her canlının işlem yaptığı düşünülebilir.
In conjunction with my presentation of
bazen de canlılara bilgisayarmış gibi bakarak onları daha iyi anlayabiliriz. Hücrenin Tasarımı adlı kitabımda yeniden üstünde durduğum saatçi teziyle birlikte saatçi öngörüsünü ortaya koydum. Hücrenin moleküler sistemlerinin çoğunun insan tasarımıyla olan benzerliğini hala ortaya koyamıyoruz çünkü benzer teknolojiler henüz geliştirilemedi. Yani teknoloji geliştikçe saatçi tezi daha da güçlenip daha kesin sonuçlarla karşımıza çıkabilir. Teknolojideki gelişmeleri biyokimyasal sistemlerde zaten var olan moleküler teknolojiyi yansıtacağı saatçi öngörüsünün temelidir. Tasarımcılar yeni teknolojiler geliştirirken daha önce bilinmeyen bu teknoloji örneklerinin hücrenin moleküler sisteminde zaten mevcut olduğu görülecektir. Diğer bir deyişle saatçi benzetmesi Allah'ın varlığını gösterir bir delil oluştururken canlılardaki biyokimyasal sistemler teknolojik gelişmeleri ışık tutacaktır.
Now related to this,
saatçi teziyle bağlantılı bir argümana karşı başka bir argüman geliştirilmiştir. Ona da karşıt saatçi tezi adı verilir.
And the idea here is this.
Buradaki düşünce şudur. Biyolojik tasarımlar bir yaratıcının eseri ise o zaman bu sistemler o kadar iyi tasarlanmış olmalıdır ki mühendislik için model olarak alınabilmeli ya da yeni teknolojilerin geliştirilmesini sağlamalıdır.
In fact, at some level, I actually find this argument more compelling.
Bu doğrultuda biyomimetik ve biyoinspirasyon disiplinleri de saatçinin yanında yer almalıdır. Belli bir seviyede karşıt saatçi tezini klasik saatçi tezinden daha inandırıcı buluyorum. Biyolojine gelseydi, biyomimetik ve biyoinspirasyon programlarının bu kadar başarılı olması düşünülemezdi.
Bu düşünce Richard Dawkins tarafından Kör Saatçi adlı kitabında şöyle dile getirilir. Artık bildiğimiz kör, şuursuz, otomatik süreçlerin bir sonucu olan doğal seleksiyon hayatın varlığı ve amacını açıklasa da kendisinin herhangi bir amacı yoktur. Aklı yoktur, düşüncesi yoktur, ilerisi için plan yapmaz, vizyonu, öngörüsü, görüşü de yoktur. Doğada saatçi rolünü oynaması söylenebilirse ancak bu kör bir saatçi olabilir. Dawkins sözlerine şunu da ekliyor. Paley canlılardaki karmaşık düzene hayranlık duyuyor. Bunun çok özel bir açıklaması olması gerektiğini görüyordu. Ne var ki yaptığı açıklamanın kendisi yanlıştı. Gerçek açıklama ancak Charles Darwin'le ortaya çıkacaktı.
And to understand that, we need to think about the way evolutionary biologists think about evolution's mechanisms. It's
unguided. It's undirected. It's blind. And all it can do is cobble together into new designs.
Most evolutionary biologists are quick to emphasize
evrimci that biyologların çoğu evrimsel süreçlerin ve yolların mükemmel tasarımlar ortaya koyamayacaklarını,
instead,
hatta evrimle oluşmuş biyolojik tasarımların bir şekilde kusurlu olacağını bilirler. Biyologların büyük bir bölümü doğal seleksiyonun iyi adapte olmuş biyolojik tasarımlar ortaya çıkarırken biyolojik sistemlerin iyi tasarlanmadığını savunurlar. Neden? Çünkü evrimci süreçler en baştan biyolojik sistemler meydana getirmez. Daha sonra bu yeni yapılar üzerinde doğal seleksiyon aracılığıyla ince ayar yapılarak optimize edilebilir. Sonuç olarak iyi adapte olmuş tasarımlar ortaya çıksa da iyi tasarlanmış sistemler meydana gelmez.
Systems. According to Ken Miller, the famous biologist, evolution does not produce perfection. The fact that every intermediate stage in the development of an organ must confer a selective advantage means that the simplest, most
evrim
elegant designs for an organ
cannot always be produced by evolution.
In fact, the hallmark of evolution is a modification of pre-existing structures. An evolved organism in short should show telltale signs of this modification.
Aslında evrimin ayrıca özelliği daha önce var olan yapıların değiştirilmesidir.
Jimmy-rigged, if they're cobbled together, if they're
evrimleşmiş bir organizma bu değişikliğin belli işaretlerini ortaya koymalıdır.
Turn to them for inspiration. If produced by evolutionary processes, even if these processes operated over the course of millions of years, biological systems
biyolojik sistemler yamalanmış bir şekilde oluşmuş olsalardı, mühendis ve teknoloji uzmanları biyolojik sistemleri kendilerine model olarak almazdı. Milyonlarca yıl sürmüş de olsa evrimsel süreçler, biyolojik sistemlerin teknolojik gelişmelere güvenilir birer isim kaynağı olmasını sağlayamaz. Mühendislerin tesadüfen meydana gelmiş biyolojik sistemleri problem çözmede ya da yeni teknolojilere isim kaynağı olarak kullanmaları düşünülemez. Mühendisliğin kendisine biyolojik tasarımları rehber olarak alması, hayatın ve tarihin evrimsel açıklanmasına taban.
On the other hand, biomimetics and bioinspiration naturally flow out of an intelligent design or a creation model.
Doğadaki tasarımlar bir yaratıcının eseri olduğuna göre doğadaki biyolojik sistemlerin mühendisliğe esin kaynağı olması gayet anlaşılır bir durum.
As a scientist, as a Christian, as
bir bilim adamı,
I find
Hristiyan olarak Tevrat ve İncil'de bilimin gelişmesiyle ilgili ifadeler dikkat çekici.
And when it comes to biomimetics and bioinspiration,
özellikle
biomimetik
ve bioinspirasyon konusunda Eyüp'ten, Eyüp bölümünden 7 ve 9 nolu pasajları söylemiştir.
Çıkıp
tutma hayvanları gökte uçan kuşlara sorsan anlatsınlar. Toprağa söylesene öyle.
And I just want to conclude to say, to God belong wisdom and power, counsel and understanding are His. Thank you very much.
Bilgelik ve güç Tanrı'ya özgüdür. Çok teşekkür ediyorum.